you in the 06010. Focus. Fantasy. Fantasy Focus. The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. And welcome into the show. It's Tuesday, July 20th. Football's getting ever so close. We've got rookies for a variety of teams reported to training camp today. And Field, me, and Stefan are hanging out with you on this Tuesday. Hello, Stefan. We've got some news upon us today.
Hi, Field. I like that you went third person right out of the gate.
You know what? I don't know why I did that. It actually feels like a little bit out of character for me. I apologize for those that are offended. I leave the third person.
It's just so out of character. It's great. Yeah. It's so nice to be back with you. I've been away from the pod for a while and, you know, traveling again. And now here I am and it's you and me holding down the fort.
It might never be the same. So close to the time we're going to be all back together, which we are just a few weeks away. I'll get a specific date at some point soon, but we promise you guys we'll be back. And we'll be back in our fancy studio like we were last year, and we cannot wait for those days. Kyle, I know, is already busy hammering away on preseason show documents. But Stefania, we had a bit of unexpected news minutes before you and I started recording this podcast, which is 10:30 a.m. Eastern time on Tuesday, which involves a potential star running back. That's Cam Akers of the Los Angeles Rams. What a bummer this one is. What can you tell us?
I know. Well, he tore his Achilles, which... you know, the one thing I'll say, don't you start with the good news? It's like this used to be automatically thought of as like the death sentence for an NFL player, especially a running back. And it's not necessarily that anymore. We've seen guys come back from this injury. We've got Marlon Mack in Indianapolis. Certainly he's not atop the depth chart like Cam Akers was because they have Jonathan Taylor, but Marlon Mack expected to play this year. And it's just so unfortunate to me. The timing of it is terrible. Obviously high hopes for Cam Akers this season. It's really interesting because we have seen guys come back from these new, more modern techniques and the rehab that they're doing within a 6-month window, sometimes shorter than that. It's a little tough for a running back, but when you look at where we are halfway through July, it's really hard to envision unless they were deep, deep into the playoffs. And at that point, it's just hard to imagine that they would use anything but an IR spot for Cam Akers.
Yeah, one has to figure the second-year running back is going to miss the entirety of the 2021 season, however long that lasts for Los Angeles. Adam Schefter's follow-up tweet to his first report suggested as much. So just brutal news, Stefania. And for any number of reasons, not the least of which is that this guy looked like the real deal at the end of last year. He ran so well for Los Angeles when he got the chance to be the featured back. We know for many seasons, Sean McVay, when he didn't have Todd Gurley, or maybe not many seasons, but for a season or two, it was a little bit of a hot hand approach, whether it was Malcolm Brown or Darrell Henderson, or even to a degree, the three-headed monster at the beginning of last year. But it seemed like the Rams were trending towards having a one-man band in the backfield. That's not going to be the case with no Cam Akers. If you take a look at the Rams depth chart right now, beyond Cam Akers at running back, there's one name everybody knows. It's Darrell Henderson, but he's a third round pick a couple of years ago that the Rams used a second round pick a year later in Cam Akers, not replace Stefania, but to supplant as their go-to back. So I think by default, Darrell Henderson should be looked at as the starter. Behind him, Raymond Calais, previously a return specialist for the Buccaneers, Jake Funk, their seventh round pick out of Maryland, good college player, also on the depth chart right now, and some other names that are a little bit further down the depth charts, less familiar. But I think, Stefania, we have to ask ourselves a couple of questions about, and we'll start with what the value would be for Darrell Henderson. And I think after that, we need to look into whether the Rams should be considering adding a running back somewhere else. How intrigued would you be by Darrell Henderson given this news surrounding Cam Akers?
You know, it's interesting. I'm not sure how to feel about him. I don't really believe that he is going to be a workhorse back. I just have this sense that there's going to be an addition that happens. As you mentioned, there's free agents that are available, none of them particularly outstanding at the moment, but you know how things happen during training camp and people shift around. I mean, obviously Darrell Henderson's value moves up a bit because there is no Cam Akers ahead of him, but I'm not running out to draft him in fantasy as an RB1. I mean, that's not where I'm looking at. I just don't feel that workload's going to be there for him. He's not that guy.
For those that remember him, and I'm sure many do listen to this podcast, but just a brief reminder, third round pick a couple of years ago, 5'8", so not a huge guy, 200 or some pounds. He's an NFL player. Obviously, he's pretty thick and well-built. But last year, Stefanie had 138 carries, averaged 4.5 yards per carry, and had 5 rushing touchdowns. I don't know if there is a specific reason why he never took on that lead back role, whether it was the Rams don't view him as the kind of guy that should be an every down back, or if it was that they just found something in Cam Akers that was so spectacular that they had to just let the good times roll with Cam Akers. But it seems like the first crack at him would, or first crack at this job, goes to Darrell Henderson. And I would think, Stefan, you're right, he's not a top 10 RB in preseason rankings, even with this news as fresh as it is. But I would think somewhere in the top 20 to 25 range for right now on Darrell Henderson, unless, and this is the big unless, there is an addition through free agency or a trade. Current free agents include the likes of Adrian Peterson, Todd Gurley, which before you suggest that one, let's not forget the terms that Todd Gurley and the Rams divorced over. It was ugly to say the least, but I suppose stranger things have happened than a player returning to a place where he once left on with a bitter taste in his mouth. Deion Lewis obviously spent last year with the Giants. You've got players like LeSean McCoy, who recently said he wants to, has talked to some teams. He, of course, back-to-back Super Bowl champion. So there are some options out there. Le'Veon Bell, I don't think anybody is an obvious, like, you got to go grab him. But and the Rams...
They all feel like they're a little bit over the hill options, you know? Yeah. I mean, and there's nothing about any of those options that you suggest might be necessary for them as a football team. None of it feels great for fantasy.
Yeah. And I think what probably, makes more sense for the Rams rather than signing one of those free agents is examining either the waiver wire or examining the trade market. Because as we know, a lot of NFL teams have good depth at running back. The 49ers, as you know, Stefania, I mean, they've got like 6 guys. Miami. Yeah, Miami's got plenty of guys. The Patriots feel like they're carrying at least a couple extra. Always are we finding teams that are like, all right, there's probably one or two.
I don't see it being a Niner because I just don't see Kyle Shanahan's not giving the Rams anybody.
Definitely not going to be via trade. But to your point about, you know, you mentioned both the 49ers and the Dolphins. Let's not forget, Savon Ahmed was a 49er at the beginning of last training camp and then got claimed by the Dolphins off of waivers. And if you remember his brief fill-in as the starter, looked more than capable. So right now, I think everybody's going to wonder where the Rams turn. I think more likely it's, we'll be patient. We'll figure this out. We've got the entire month of August to sort through it. But I wouldn't suspect, and maybe I'm way off here, the Rams make a major move. But to level set, I think for now, Darrell Henderson's probably going to catapult somewhere in the, I would say, 20 to 25 range for running backs. Speaking of running backs, and this is a running back who's way higher up in the preseason rankings, but maybe we'll see his stock drop just a little bit, Stefania. Saquon Barkley spoke yesterday to Pro Camp, and I don't believe it's the first time we've either heard from Saquon or someone close to Saquon this offseason, but it's the most recent sound from him. And what did you make about what he had to say, and specifically, what did he have to say?
So the words that are being quoted and running on the bottom line are, we'll see. When asked about whether he'd be ready to go to the start of training camp, we'll see. How about week one? We'll see. You know, kind of the message of taking it one day at a time, see how he's doing. And this message has really been put forward since the OTAs, but somehow I feel like people have not been paying attention. There's this desire, I think, to imagine Saquon Barkley being back to what he was, that people have sort of discounted the information that I think has been there. And Jordan Ronan has done a great job of laying down the tidbits as they've rolled out, especially during OTAs. He was not visible during OTAs. He was rehabbing, Saquon was. And the Giants said something that I thought people ignored, which was, we are going to make sure he's 100% ready for his body and his injury before we return him. And they made it clear there was no timeline, and that extended into the season. And I feel like people just ignored that. They weren't paying attention. Like, he's going to be back. I wrote a piece for us. It's still up on ESPN.com if you have ESPN Plus. And my point was, this is not a binary issue. This is not Saquon will be good or he'll never be the same. You know, he's either great like he was or he'll never be the same. It's not like that. This is really a question of when does he get back to being Saquon? And I think given the injury, given the surgery, given the progression, and given where he is and what he's doing, which is what you really have to look at. You can't just compare it to every other ACL, MCL, meniscus. You have to look at where he is currently. And where he is currently is not doing the football things that you would anticipate. I don't think you're going to see him at the start of camp. I think they're going to ease him in volume-wise. And even when he gets back to playing, I think that happens. The point being, this is very good news for the long-term health of Saquon. And them picking up his fifth year option tells you they're potentially interested in Saquon long term. So are they going to run him out there and ruin him early? No. But for fantasy purposes, I'd be thinking there's at least the potential that he is not ready to start when the season begins. And then even when he does, what's his volume initially?
Yeah, and I think, Stefania, a lot of people have sort of wrapped their minds around the idea that there are probably six running backs that many rankers will have as their clear-cut top six going into the season. In some order, Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara, Derrick Henry, Ezekiel Elliott, and also Saquon. As a matter of fact, I just pulled up our ESPN.com rankings, and all six of us that have a rank up there right now have those six in some order. All of us have Christian McCaffrey one, and then from there, there's a little bit less consensus. But if I were to do those rankings right now, well, I wouldn't have to change anything because I already had Saquon number six out of those six, but I wouldn't be surprised if the lack of certainty that he's available for the beginning of the preseason, multiplied by the idea that the Giants might be a little prudent with his workload early in the season, pushes him down to number six more across the board in those rankings amongst our other ESPN.com rankers. So we're not sounding any alarms right now on Saquon, but if you're drafting right now and you're making a difficult call at pick four or five and you're splitting hairs between Ezekiel Elliott and Saquon Barkley, or Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley, and Derrick Henry, this might be useful context to have available for you right now as you're making that, you know, always difficult decision.
Let me ask you something. If you knew that he was not going to play until October, would you still keep him at six?
Oh, no way. If he wasn't going to play until October, which would mean probably 3 to 4 games missed.
Right.
He might be, might be all the way down to 11 or 12 for me.
The reason I say that is that has been put out there by Jordan, but I feel like that is not really being looked at. Now, granted, a lot can change. And we've seen the videos, the hype videos of Saquon training. It looks fantastic. And you look at his legs, you go, how could that guy not be ready?
Yeah.
Go back and look at the video. Tell me how many times you see it shot from the left versus the right. I mean, there's things, these are the things I look for. And while his left leg looks enormous and his right leg, by comparison to normal human beings, looks quite large, his right and his left, not necessarily the same. And there's a lot of nuance with this kind of injury in terms of coming back, where it's not necessarily you're worried about the graft tearing. Again, you're not worried about the ACL re-injury per se. That's always, you know, at least a base level concern. But look at Dalvin Cook and what happened the year he came back from his ACL. And as his volume increased, he had the hamstring problem, never was really healthy that first year. Those are the things that they worry about when bringing a player back like this. So I would just say, I think that it's been floated out there for a reason. And people need to keep in mind that that could be the case. If you want to draft Saquon early because you think, I don't care, he's worth it, because if I get the second half of the season and he's going to be that guy, then I'll just make up for it by picking up someone else early. I would just say you better provide some insurance for your roster under the premise that he may not be available for a few weeks.
Very, very interesting. Again, this is another reason why, if you can afford to do so, drafting in late August / early September is always a worthwhile strategy. A little bit of news we'll just sort of rip through here. Aaron Rodgers, the latest saga with him and Green Bay, or the latest chapter in the saga, includes news from Adam Schefter this morning that Green Bay offered to make him the highest paid quarterback in the NFL via a 2-year extension on top of the 3 years he has remaining this offseason. And it was declined, as Aaron Rodgers is not concerned about the money right now, Stefania. No surprise there. Here's what I'll say is that I don't know when this thing's going to come to a conclusion. I don't know how it's going to come to a conclusion. I don't know if the conclusion includes the possibility of him playing for somebody else. I don't know if there is some, you know, trap door that the Packers can try to escape through that will allow Aaron Rodgers to change his mind, or compel Aaron Rodgers to change his mind. But at this point, if you're asking me questions about how high Aaron Rodgers should be drafted, what does it mean for Davante Adams? I'm just being transparent with you. Like, I'm guessing. I really am, right? Like, Aaron Rodgers seems principled enough and has been acting as such this offseason that if you told me Aaron Rodgers doesn't play at all this year, I wouldn't be stunned. At the same time, if you told me that Aaron Rodgers and the Packers are able to work out an agreement that allows him to be guaranteed or effectively guaranteed a trade after this year, and he decides by the middle of training camp, he's back, he's going to play it out for one more year, I also wouldn't be stunned. So I would say that, and you can, I'd be curious if your thoughts differ. Davante Adams has a large enough sample size of being not just fantastic with Aaron Rodgers, but really good with other wide receivers and with other quarterbacks, excuse me. We saw him with Brett Hundley 1 year. I think he had like 8 touchdowns or 10 touchdowns in that season, which Aaron Rodgers missed a significant period of time. He won't go number one overall amongst wide receivers if I knew Aaron Rodgers wasn't going to play, but I don't think he's dropping past like 5 or 6. He's just that special of a player. Does that feel different than your approach if there's even uncertainty surrounding Aaron Rodgers when your draft comes around?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, just because of the quarterback change, his value drops a little bit. I'm not making that push to get Davante Adams so high in the first round. And I think, you know, the Green Bay has been certainly going out of their way to let us know how good Jordan Love looks and how, you know, much improvement in the OTAs. But of course, he wasn't throwing to top receivers then because they weren't there. I think your two options are the ones I foresee. Either Aaron Rodgers sits out the year and takes the hit financially because he doesn't care. He's dug in, or he's guaranteed, you know, 1 year in and he's out and he doesn't show up until late. I don't care if Aaron Rodgers shows up the day before the season starts. The minute he walks in, everyone's value skyrockets, right? He doesn't need camp. They have chemistry all between all of them. And yes, I still think Davante Adams probably remains at my top three, maybe number one. But it's hard for me to just equate the move with Jordan Love. I just don't know how that offense looks.
Yeah, I mean, no one does, right? I feel like it's funny. I was actually having this conversation with a coach at one point this summer, whose team, you know, they're sorting through a variety of competitions, and he sort of said to me, you know, I always see you guys talking about who's going to win the job? When is so-and-so going to be decided as a starter? Like he said, you realize that the teams don't know the answer to that question. That's kind of why they're holding a competition. So when I say we don't know what the Packers offense looks like with Jordan Love, nor does the Packers. He played 0 games last year. So I think it's worth noting that, you know, as much as you may have confidence in Jordan Love because he was a first round pick last year, or as much as you may be concerned by the fact that he wasn't even their QB2 last year, a lot of things can change once a player actually has a chance to be on the field. So, all right, that's enough for the news here, Stefania, because I want to get to some really interesting stuff from Mike Clay. And then of course, some user questions. Before we get to Mike Clay's most recent fantasy playbook, a word from our friends at 5-Hour Energy, because before your workout, if you want to get in shape, but you're having trouble, you know, staying motivated, make 5-Hour Energy Shots part of your lifestyle and get the energy boost you need to get fit. We all know you sometimes don't want to go to the gym, so you take a 5-Hour Energy Shot to give you the feeling and alertness so you can actually get to the gym. 5-Hour Energy is the brand hardworking people like you, Stefania, have trusted for 17 years to give alert, energized feelings that you need to get through a busy hectic day. And you always know where to find 5-Hour Energy Shots. Right at the cash register at nearly every convenience, drug, and grocery store nationwide. I can't recall the number of times I've been on a road trip and picked up a 5-Hour Energy Shot to make it through to the next pit stop. So stock up on money-saving multi-packs to make sure you never run out of delicious, energizing 5-Hour Energy Shots. If you go to 5hourenergy.com, and that's the number 5hourenergy.com, and get some 5-Hour Energy product, you can do so today. You can use our promo code FFF to receive 10% off of your order. This offer is only valid until September 30th on one order and cannot be used with other promotions. The code is not good on subscription orders, but go to 5hourenergy.com today. Again, use the promo code FFF. You ever wonder if Mike Clay takes vacations, Stefania? Because I'm not convinced he does.
I'm not convinced, except for he does. He has posted some adorable pictures with his family. But I was wondering more if that laptop, it really shouldn't be called a laptop because it's like the heaviest computer I've ever tried to pick up that has all his projections. And it's got the wizardry in it. He takes it with him everywhere he goes. So a true also, vacation, I'm not sure.
Mike's computer is noisier than my car engine. Like you're sitting next to him and you think the thing's going to explode or like burst into outer space like Jeff Bezos. So Mike, that computer must be very important and it's very useful because I hope he does. It allows him to put together compelling content like his playbook. And Mike does an amazing amount of work on ESPN.com. A lot of it's statistically driven, but one thing he told me that he thought was, you know, sort of interesting about this playbook piece was that it was an opportunity to just sort of write his thoughts and not have to be all about stats. So we're going to kind of just run through some of the thoughts that Mike shared here. And he noted that looking at quarterbacks right now, Stefania, kind of top heavy. And if you look at some of the guys that are being drafted highest amongst quarterbacks, the first five are Patrick Mahomes, 17th. This is overall, not amongst quarterbacks. This is 17th overall at all positions. Josh Allen going at the back of the third round at 28th. Kyler Murray, 37th. Lamar Jackson, 47th. Dak, 49th. You've got other quarterbacks who I think could be serviceable starters at least this year and potentially very good starters, who are not even being drafted in the majority of ESPN leagues. That includes the likes of Matt Ryan, Baker Mayfield, Justin Fields, if he becomes a starter, Ben Roethlisberger, who you can say what you want about Ben, the guy still could throw for 4,500 yards and it wouldn't be a major shock. Speaking generally, Stefania, and I know we talk about this all the time, but speaking generally, do you feel as though your strategy for quarterback has changed, or are you still going to be the one who waits a little bit and allows the board to come to you in the drafted quarterback?
I still am going to be the patient one, I think, and wait. However, Mahomes is such an outlier, and it really depends. You know, if we're talking standard leagues, I think I wait because the depth is that, 10-team standard scoring, that's one thing.
Yep.
Obviously, 2-quarterback league changes completely. Super flex league changes completely. We all did the Scott Fishbowl. I had the first overall pick. There was zero question in my mind that it was going Patrick Mahomes. It's also a league where you have penalties for interceptions and sacks. So you need somebody who can move and is accurate. So the prioritization can be different in terms of how your league scores, certainly. But it really is. It's my strategy changes based on the draft room around me. And so I have leagues where I know people are going to go way too early. And if I think I have, a top running back is still a priority for me. And as you said, look, we were talking earlier about there's six. And to me, Saquon isn't really in that same tier for me because I have more concerns. So if there's five and I'm in that first five or six picks, I want a running back there. And somebody else might want to take Mahomes, and I'm not going to make that trade off.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and I feel like sometimes on the show, especially early on in the season, we end up repeating the same caveats all the time, right? So if Patrick Mahomes slides to the middle of the fourth round, somewhere around pick 34, as opposed to pick 17, yeah, of course I'd be willing to pull the trigger. But speaking generally, my approach to quarterbacks and understanding that fantasy football is always going to be more art than science is I don't often start the train of quarterbacks. And I don't often end the train of quarterbacks. I usually find myself somewhere in between those two tent poles, which I know is a wide range, but of those quarterbacks that you just saw that I just mentioned there based off their ADP, I got to tell you, the one that's actually most interesting to me, and I know that he has the biggest question mark because of his health, it's either Lamar or Dak, right? I mean, we're a year removed from Lamar's transcendent season. 1,000 yards rushing is obviously within reach. And Dak, you know, before he got hurt last year and the year prior to that, was a top three fantasy quarterback. So the opportunity for those two to be real values to me, I think, is real.
The Dak one to me, you know, I like Dak coming back this year. We've certainly heard lots of good things. He's had a good amount of time in terms of recovery, but you know, it's not uncommon for guys to be a little bit less mobile, at least initially after this kind of injury. I'm not counting on him. He looked so good moving around before he got hurt, you know, and he could take off if he needed to, even though that wasn't really his game. He's certainly not Lamar, but I really want to see what he looks like moving. We haven't seen that yet. So I think from a passing standpoint, the potential with Dak, I mean, everybody's going to catch passes, and Zeke is one of the most pass catching happy running backs that you could have. So the fantasy value is there, but I think it might take a little bit of hit in their rushing.
Sure. So Mike's thoughts on running back, just again, there are a lot of thoughts. So I encourage you to read the fantasy playbook on ESPN Plus right now. But Mike notes, and this, again, before the Cam Akers news, that there's decent depth at running back for a change. So you've got four players who were top 10 backs last season that are going outside the top 30 on average draft position right now, Stefania. How about that? David Montgomery, James Robinson, Josh Jacobs, and Kareem Hunt are all going outside the top 30 picks, not top 30 running backs, top 30 picks total. And I think you can probably intuitively surmise why that's the case. But whether it's James Robinson and Travis Etienne splitting work, Josh Jacobs and, you know, obviously Kenyon Drake, Kareem Hunt, just the fact that it's clearly the Nick Chubb show first and foremost, and then people not necessarily buying into David Montgomery, despite how he ran in the second half of last year. Do you feel this year, because of the depth, you're a little bit less prone to try to walk away with a running back in your first one or two picks?
No. Okay. I think I'd still look at, because there's a difference. You know, there is a difference. David Montgomery, I mean, Matt Nagy's certainly trying to get us to believe that there is going to be, that he's going to be touching the ball more frequently, but we don't know exactly. I think of the four that are mentioned there that are going outside the top 30 picks, Montgomery is interesting to me because I think that offense could change quite a bit. And I think the Josh Jacobs hate, the pushback has gone too far. I don't really understand it. I feel like there's sort of the sentiment against him. Oh, he's hurt. He is banged up a bit, but he plays through these things. And we don't really know that Kenyon Drake is going to make that huge of a dent in what Josh Jacobs does. The Robinson one, I understand, because Jacksonville is just so confusing, as you already mentioned. Travis Etienne there definitely hurts his opportunity. But I'd know, because I again, it depends on my draft position. But if I'm in that first half of the round, I certainly want one of those top running backs.
Yeah, I'm there too, Stefania. And I know that there are people who are subscribers to the zero RB theory. And Kyle Jordan on Twitter noted that I keep hearing about this strategy. I'm not sure I buy it. What do you guys say? And some are wondering, what is the zero running back strategy? And
it's such a misnomer, right? Yeah, this right. doesn't mean you're drafting a team with zero
running backs, right? Basically, the idea behind zero running backs is that you're waiting until a much later round than you normally see people draft running backs. Sometimes it's round six, sometimes it's, you know, even round five. But the idea is that you can leverage the fact that others are drafting running backs early to potentially, and this would be sort of perfect scenario, but like you could hypothetically, let's imagine Aaron Rodgers playing for the Packers for a second, walk away from the first three rounds of your draft, Stefania, with Davante Adams, or call it Stephon Diggs if there's uncertainty surrounding Aaron Rodgers, Travis Kelce, and Patrick Mahomes for the first three rounds. Now, that's going to include you then drafting a running back who's a little less certain, but you might have such a dramatic or a potentially dramatic weekly edge, especially at tight end and quarterback, that you could offset some of your running back woes. You know, Stefania, my thoughts enter this. And maybe this is the wrong strategy, but I've always felt like, you know, going into the season, you and I and Matthew, everybody in the podcast plays in a lot of leagues. You're not going to win them all. As a matter of fact, you might not win, you know, you might win one or two in a year and feel great about it. It's hard. You know, you play in a 10-team league, you have a 10% chance of winning, but I always like to increase my floor, right? And I've always felt like having some running backs that I felt good about going into the season always increases my floor. I just felt like I feel like there's more volatility and the potential for a dud roster if I go in with the zero running back strategy. Doesn't mean I totally bypass it, but that's why I tend to not rely upon it. What are your thoughts?
It's, you know, I was never a fan of that weight on running backs, even though I'm the same person who says running back's the most vulnerable position. You know, you can you invest in a top tier running back because you expect them to touch the ball, especially in PPR leagues and with so many pass catching running backs now, that combo. And last year I drafted Saquon Barkley in a bunch of leagues and look what happened to me. So just if I had avoided him, I would have ended up with a perhaps similar roster. Let's say I'd invested somewhere else and drafted a running back later. Might've worked out even better given that I lost my number one running back, but that's always going to be the potential to happen for any player on the field. And I think there are so few running backs who clearly have this dominant role within their running back grouping on a team. You know, how many teams have such a disparity between the top running back and the next guy? You know, Christian McCaffrey is going to have next to no competition for the amount of volume of work that he's going to do in Carolina. If Saquon were totally healthy, I would say the same. Zeke is going to have the lion's share of the work where he is. You know, that's what you're looking for. And while you can potentially piece together running backs that can do very well for you, I think you lose out if you're not able to get one of those. Now, if I'm in the back half of my draft and those top ones are gone, I'm having to pick between some of these running backs where the workload might be split. Like you said, Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt doesn't feel like a totally fair split because, as you said, I agree. It's Nick Chubb until sometimes Kareem Hunt. It's not really like a 50-50 split. Mm-hmm. But then I might start shifting my strategy. And I do think there's some value to be had, again, when the hate or the pushback goes too far. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a good example. Drafted early last year, one case by me, drafted too early based on the prospect. And everything looked good in week one because we saw him on the field a ton. But then that really shifted. I don't think that now his value is such in drafts that you can get him in, I think, the fifth or sixth or even later rounds in some of the drafts I've seen. And he's still going to be their top running back, I believe. And maybe it's going to be a better balance for him in that offense this year. So I am not a zero. I don't go in with that strategy of zero running back. But I can't say that I wouldn't end up taking someone later if everyone in my first round drafted running back early and I was stuck at the back end.
Also worth noting, Stefania, like if you play in 9 or 10 leagues, like you probably will have a couple instances or at least one where you go for the zero RB strategy. But if you play in just one league, and we're always mindful of the fact that some people listen to the show just play in one, maybe two leagues, and they don't want to have a season that explodes before their own eyes within the first month. So that's why I would say less frequently am I suggesting the zero RB strategy. A couple more thoughts here.
Just one more real quick on the running backs. You know, we were talking about knowing your league and knowing the structure of it, knowing the scoring, and going back to us doing the super flex league where the value for quarterbacks was different. And so we were all reaching there. So it was 12 teams in the league. And I actually got Austin Eckler as my first running back in the third round, I want to say. And that's amazing to me because I think he is undervalued in some ways. And so that was a situation where I went Patrick Mahomes first. I was able to get Austin Eckler later. And so again, you just have to watch the draft board. And if you have ideas on who you want to target, you see how the draft is going. That can influence you. You don't feel like you have to do it because somebody said, oh, you should take a running back in the first round.
Sure, sure. No doubt about that. So just a couple more thoughts here from Mike's playbook. On wide receivers, he notes, it's as deep as ever. And I went through my rankings right now, Stefania, or the consensus rankings on ESPN.com, which are pretty similarly aligned. And I think there's a case that at least the first 25, maybe even 28 wide receivers might be players that I would be comfortable with if they were my number one wide receiver. And that may sound crazy to you, but if you told me I walked away from my draft and I was so well built at running back and tight end that my top wide receiver was Diontae Johnson, I'd say fine. There are certainly scenarios. The guy had nearly 90 catches last season, right? Julio Jones, another guy being drafted is ranked close to the 20s. But you can certainly, like, I'd feel more comfort with Julio Jones as my wide receiver one than I would. I believe he's running back. I'm sorry, wide receiver 18 on the board right now. I'd feel more comfortable that my team was going to be good if he was my wide receiver one than I would if the running back 18, Chris Carson, was my running back one, right? So the depth of wide receiver is just so overwhelming that I'm okay with waiting. But I guess the counterpoint would be if everyone is waiting on wide receivers, understanding that there's value there, would it behoove you, Svanya, to zig when they zag and maybe try to get in there early, right? Like maybe you're saying, everybody in the league is saying, well, you know, I'm going to, like, let someone else draft Stephon Diggs because I can get whoever it is, Robert Woods, and I can get Mike Evans later on, that you end up getting Stephon Diggs as like the 15th player on the board. Should you be hunting value at wide receiver early because of everybody's patience?
I think you're always hunting value. I think that's good draft strategy. I feel like a broken record, but it is a bit of watching the board and seeing how things are playing out. And that's exactly the time that I would go for a top receiver like that. If you see that, you know, I'm not going to be the person who drafts a wide receiver in the first round, most likely. You know, I'll never say never, but that's most likely not going to be me. But if I see that everyone's waiting because they've heard there's such value at wide receiver, I'm going to wait, and they're going in all these different directions, why wouldn't I take advantage of that and try and get myself one of the top wide receivers, even if then that meant that I'm leaving the position alone for the next three or four rounds?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I just think that because of the depth of wide receivers, though, you're right. Like, we should always be hunting value, like in general in fantasy football, but because of the depth of wide receivers, Devon, I found myself, you know, I'm just doing this dynasty startup league right now with 10 other people in the football industry. And, like, you know, I snagged, I want to say Devontae Adams, something like 31st overall or 30th overall. But there are plenty of reasons to, it's a two quarterback league. That's why he went later than you might expect. But like, I'm in like the 11th round right now. And I'm like, wow, like that guy could certainly be a guy that I count on and rely upon going forward. Last thought from Mike's playbook. And again, one more time, go find it on ESPN Plus. Tight end, extremely top heavy, but trending up. We know, Stefania, that you've got a clear top three this year: Travis Kelce, George Kittle, and Travis Kelce. By the way, Travis Kelce. For those that missed it, apparently we've been calling it wrong. Have you seen this or no?
No. Wait, what? I have. I mean, yeah. But I've met his brother unplugged too, and he goes,
yes, yes.
So he's never corrected me.
Right, and as a matter of fact, like when they do their Sunday Night Football introductions, like they don't say, "Hey, Travis Kelce, Cincinnati," or "Jason Kelce, Cincinnati." I think this might be one where maybe, like, you know, either when they were born or maybe like a couple generations ago, it was Kelce, but now they go by Kelce. So we can, I mean, at this point. So
what is the preferred by them? Because I like to respect how people prefer their names to be.
The sense I got was that maybe, I think if you say Kelce, it's like a sign that you're paying attention, but they're not going to take offense to Kelce. We've come this far, right? Like, clearly, they're not offended by it. They don't seem to be bothered by much. We love both the Kelce brothers. So my guess is that this could be kind of like when Alvin Kamara was asked.
I was like, just going to say, is this a Kamara? Is it a Tyrod?
He was like, I don't really care. Yeah. Well, I think Tyrod has a preference, right? Like right. It's Tyrod Taylor. It's not Tyrod. It's Tyrod. I think both Kamara/Kamara, Kelce/Kelce, Kels are appropriate. I think we're seeing a little bit more value though in tight ends this year, Stefania. I do feel like we've got players that, you know, can be useful this season. I'm not saying that they're guys that I'm putting draft premiums on, but again, if you miss out on those top three, I think this year there are players that I feel more comfortable with than I would have drafting as like the 10th or 11th tight end than I did in previous years. Do you agree?
I do. I think I'm really curious about some particular ones. Like, I agree, the top three, you know, there's really no debate about that. There's a lot of chatter about Kyle Pitts. Some people think he's being, you know, overdrafted, drafted too early because we, you know, he's a rookie. We've never seen this. And, but I mean, this, I just think the opportunity is there for him. So I still love Kyle Pitts and he's, you know, and I think he will end up a top five tight end without a doubt. I'm curious what you think about a couple of names, Noah Fant, who I think is extremely talented, but there's big quarterback question there and the offense goes as the quarterback goes. And TJ Hockenson, who people are in love with this year, but I'm like, have we forgotten that Jared Goff is a quarterback there now? And I just don't have much confidence in that. I thank goodness Daniel's not here today, so he doesn't have to hear this.
But say whatever you want, yeah.
I don't have much confidence in the Detroit offense at all. I'm confused about their running back situation. I think Jamal Williams is going to have more opportunity than people are giving credit for. I don't know what. Yes, TJ Hockenson makes sense as a regular target, but is that going to be executed? So those are two I really wonder about. Please help me out.
Yeah, I mean, I've got Fant ranked 9th and I've got Hockenson ranked 6th, which I don't want to be the person that's like taking the easy way out on these things too frequently, Stefania, but I do believe that my tight end 6 through maybe even 16, which that would be TJ Hockenson all the way down to Austin Hooper, are not exactly perfectly interchangeable, but in some ways they could be, right? Like, let me read some of the names that are in that mix. And I'm just telling you, I could see a world where they finish as the 6th best tight end. TJ Hockenson, Dallas Goedert, Logan Thomas, Mike Gesicki, Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry. Heck, you could have 2 Patriots tight ends finish as top 10. I know that's incredibly unlikely based off history. It's also incredibly infrequently where a team has 2 of the 4 highest paid tight ends in football, right? So they clearly want to make that a big part of their offense. There are a lot of guys that I could see having top 6 potential. At the same time, I could see all the guys that I mentioned finishing outside the top 10, maybe other than Hockenson. Like, fantasy football, specifically at tight ends, is a very, very fickle spot. All right, so again, go find the piece. Mike has all kinds of great thoughts. And of course, Mike will be a part of our podcast several times throughout the week during the season. Before we take a couple of questions, friends of our podcast, Geico, want to know this. Do you own or rent your home? I'm sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work, but you know it's easy. Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. All right, Stefania, let's have a couple of questions here really quick. Let's see if we can get through 4 or 5. You mentioned him earlier, and so we'll reiterate. This comes from Joey. Are you back in on CEH now that the ADP is reasonable, which is currently 30th overall?
Yes, and I think it's too early to abandon someone after a rookie season where it was I'm not sure what happened in terms of how they decided to utilize their running backs, but clearly when Clyde Edwards-Helaire struggled at the goal line, I felt like that was significant, kind of made some changes in terms of utilization. And, you know, he's another year into his career now. I thought it was interesting, this Adam Tyker report that both Mahomes and Edwards-Helaire suggested they should throw more passes to their running backs this year. So, you know, if anyone can deliver the ball where it needs to be and make it easier on a running back, I think it's that guy, Patrick Mahomes. I think the hate has gone too far. I think he's clearly the top of their depth chart. I think he's the guy, and I think there's reasonable value there.
I know that he had a couple of games that sort of saturated some of the rushing total, but in borderline worst case scenario, which I feel like in some ways last year was for CEH, He had 803 rushing yards, 36 catches, 5 total touchdowns in 13 games played. And one of those, he got hurt. So I do think there's reason to be more optimistic. I agree with you there. Here's a philosophical question. Both of us can chime in. Do you prefer ceiling or floor players on your bench? Does that change with the number of teams in your league? That comes from David. Your thoughts, Stefania? On your bench.
Bench. I'm really glad you said that, because I had to, that makes the difference, right? So on my bench, ceiling, without a doubt, ceiling.
Yep.
And you?
On my bench, ceiling. On my roster, generally speaking, ceiling as well, right? Because, you know, we, again, like in fantasy football, you're not rewarded for fifth place, right, in your league. So I do think there's something to be said for almost always chasing upside. There might be some balance there, though, right, Stefania? So let's say, for example, you chase the upside of Daryl Henderson. Now that we have the Cam Akers news where he tore his Achilles, maybe on your bench you find somebody that doesn't, and I'm trying to think of a perfect name, doesn't represent quite as much upside, but might give you a reasonable floor. I'm just making this up offhand. Maybe it's Myles Gaskin as an example, right? As somebody that may not necessarily he may not have top 10 upside, but you think if he gets his touches, he'll be a top, 25 back without thinking too much about it. So that might be an example of a situation where you chase upside early and then balance it out with floor later. Before we have a couple more questions, Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is brought to you by Gum Out. Today, we're talking performance enhancement. Everyone wants it, and some, let's face it, are looking for shortcuts. You can actually get enhanced performance in just 2 minutes twice a year with Gum Out. Gum Out with Carbon Clear is performance enhancement for your car. Carbon Clear is potent. It's the most advanced fuel additive on the market. In fact, cars on Gum Out get better engine performance, increased fuel efficiency, and lower emissions. It only takes 2 minutes to pour Gum Out into a gas tank, so it's quick and easy to use. That part's important. With all the things you deal with to get your car running smoothly, it's nice to know Gum Out takes no time at all. You probably take much longer deciding who to put in your lineup every week. I know I certainly do. And it's not hard to find. You can get it at mass retailers or your local auto parts store. So what are you waiting for? Get your car running with Gum Out now with Carbon Clear. Performance enhancement for your car. All right, Stefania, a couple more questions to wrap things up here. Your thoughts here. Do you think Austin Ekeler will take a step forward as this offense matures, or do you think his touch upside is limited?
No, I think I don't think his touch upside is limited. I think Austin Ekeler, like he came back from a really nasty hamstring injury last year, and played well. And so, if there was any injury concern, that's behind it. I think that Austin Ekeler has incredible opportunity, especially as a pass catcher.
I feel the same way. I mean, he might be not the best. I don't know. He's right there in the mix, right? I mean, he and Christian McCaffrey and a couple others are amongst the top pass catching running backs in the NFL. He played in 10 games last year, averaged less than 12 rushes per game, but he averaged over 5 catches per game, Stefania, right? So the floor is so significant for Austin Ekeler. And I understand it's a new offense. I understand it's a new offensive system. But if you look at the investments in the backfield this year, this offseason, who was the Chargers added that makes you think to yourself, okay, this is a problem, right? I think Joshua Kelly may have a role, but we saw what happened when he was the backup guy last year. There wasn't a ton of upside there for Josh Kelly. I really believe there's a chance that push comes to shove, Austin Ekeler's volume goes up and not levels off or even goes down.
I agree.
Here's a good one. This one comes from Jim. To wrap things up, how do you decide when to take Travis Kelce over a high-end running back? What is your general draft plan if you end up with Kelce in the first? You want this one, or I can take it?
No, you can. Sorry, I feel like we kind of said this earlier.
Yeah. But no, I agree. Ahead. So, my general thought is that 5 running backs for sure go 1 through 5. This is assuming standard scoring. And a good rule of thumb is that if we don't bring up the scoring format, just assume it's standard scoring. Like if I'm talking about a tight end premium league or a half PPR, non-PPR scoring 2 quarterback league, I'll make sure I note it. That being said, I think Travis Kelce belongs somewhere in picks 7 to 10, Stefania. After the running backs, the first five that we talked about earlier, plus Saquon Barkley for me, maybe not for you. And then anything from there is fair game. And, you know, there could come a year where Travis Kelce, who's in his early 30s, levels off and looks more like a tight end who's in his early 30s looks like. I don't think that's this year. And because of the difference-making edge that he provides at his position, it's not just that you're getting a weekly starter that is so, so good, had double-digit fantasy points in every game that he played last year. It's that you're also getting a tight end who almost every week, if you were to just look at the position, is probably absent when he plays the Raiders or when the Chiefs play the Raiders, getting you somewhere between a 6 to maybe even like, I don't know, 12, 14, 15 point edge at the position. And then speaking of, you know, again, everything's generally my general draft plan. If I get Kelce in the first, is probably think running back in the second round. That's, again, we talked about earlier how we like to have that feeling of comfort with one running back early. If the board has thinned out and there's a Stephon Diggs or a Devontae Adams with Aaron Rodgers available for me, I'll consider it. But again, thinking and speaking generally, if I take Travis Kelce, I'm thinking running back right after that.
Exactly. And I think that's where your draft position matters, because if I'm late in a 10-team league or a 12-team league and he's there and I decide I want to get him in the, like, let's say you're in the final third of your draft and pick orders, then I might take him and get a running back, because you know you're going to get looped back pretty quickly. So you're going to have a good idea of which running backs are going to be available to you.
No doubt about that. All right, that's all we have for today. Stefania, wonderful job. We'll talk to you most likely next week, and we'll talk to the podcast universe most likely in a week. We promise we're back soon. And when we're back,
it's so close.
We are coming back 0 to 60. We are 100% back in. We cannot wait for that. In the meantime, may stay up to date on all the latest news, and be sure that you are watching not just all NFL news, but the NBA Finals, as Game 6 takes place tonight with the chance for the Bucks to close out. Stefania, I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Phil. It's been nice chatting with you.
You as well. And one more word as we say goodbye. The Woj Pod examines how did Giannis Antetokounmpo go from a Greek teen of Nigerian descent honking trinkets on the streets of Athens to a two-time NBA MVP in a three-part Giannis draft podcast. Listen to the Woj Pod, which is outstanding wherever you get your podcasts. You're in the 06010.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.